Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. And first of all, a bunch of things to say before we officially start the show. But one is thank you to everyone involved with putting on a special broadcast last night. We had a two-hour pre-debate roundtable panel special. It was a lockbox event. We were making money for the station. We made a lot of money during the time, and it was great. We have wonderful listeners who had just lovely, beautiful comments. My thanks to just our entire panel. Everybody did a tremendous job. They gave up their evening, and I just thank them. They were wonderful. That is actually still is on our website, is archived and on our website. So if you'd like to hear it and you missed it, it's really good. I mean, even though the debate's over, it's still really good. And I think you'll get something out of it because it's quite fascinating. So thanks to everyone. Thanks to the entire staff and all of our volunteers and everybody who worked so hard. The building was full and buzzing last night, and there was an electricity in here, and it was really cool to see. So that happened and was just a really nice event. We will get to the debate in a minute. I promise you, don't worry. We're not going to let this one go by. I do want to just say and enlist the help of our fellow panelists here, but it is 9/11, and as we speak, there are ceremonies going on in New York City. There will be a ceremony later on in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and at the Pentagon. And it is, believe it or not, 23 years ago, which seems unbelievable. I was on the air sitting at this microphone. Maybe we got a new one, but I kind of doubt it. And sitting at this microphone and it's hard to believe. So I would just like to take a moment before we start talking about the debate, to talk a little bit about, 9/11 and where we are 23 years later, because and one thing that I noticed I thought was interesting last night, that on the eve of 9/11, the debate covered many, many topics, but weirdly, security not one of them. Bob?
Yeah, it's. I'm surprised that there wasn't some recognition. First and foremost, it's the day actually does remind me of 9/11. It was beautiful. And the loss of people at both the Pentagon and Shanksville, and certainly at the World Trade Center, can't be forgotten. So, as you go about your busy days today, remember the families and everybody who is impacted by what occurred. Also, as we get into debate, and we're going to talk about the politics and the divisiveness and what's going on in the country, I just want to hearten back to what happened and how the country came together, and the fact that we actually are a country and we are better together. And I don't want there to have to be another 9/11, but there has to be something that brings us back together as a country right now, because there are some pretty deep divides that we can get into as we talk about last night in the upcoming election. And then to anybody who continues in the field, the brothers and sisters out there in fire and law enforcement and EMS, every day they're out there working for us. Be safe and keep the faith.
Bob Griffin is Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany. Malia DeMont, Chief of Staff and Vice President for Strategy and Policy at Bard College. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Joe, and thanks for bringing this up. And so I think, as is normal, like a lot of us harken back, because it's a day you'll never forget what you were doing that morning. And I was in Army training, which is it's a uniquely isolating experience. You don't have cell phones. You're really relying on other people to tell you what's going on. So it was a very strange and difficult day. And, you know, years later, I ended up working in the section of the Pentagon where the plane went in that had been rebuilt. And I was in the strategy office for several years and, you know, always mindful, like, this is where my office is and, you know, in this particular part of the building. And I think the Pentagon Memorial, probably not a lot of people have been there. It doesn't tend to be on the hot list of Washington D.C. tourist spots, but it's really nicely done. It's a very moving, beautiful place, and I recommend that people stop by when they are in D.C.
Fred Hoff is senior fellow, Center for Civic Engagement at Bard College. Ambassador Fred Hoff.
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, esteemed colleagues. Joe. Yes, thank you. Thank you very much for raising the subject of 9/11 to kick us off today. My wife and I were in France when this happened, and during the week after 9/11, I can't tell you the number of times we heard from French people. We're all Americans now. In the wake of what happened. For Americans of a certain age, myself included, there are at least two traumatic events that will remain imprinted forever. 9/11, the assassination of JFK. I would add to that the assassination of Martin Luther King. Yes. and Robert Kennedy. But for me, the lasting image, the lasting impression of 9/11 will always be New York City firefighters charging into those doomed buildings. I think it's difficult to look at the long stretch of American history, which has witnessed a lot of heroism. It's difficult to find anything more heroic than that.
Well, it certainly is a day for remembrance, a day for thinking and reflecting, and there will be many ceremonies in communities across this country, and of course at the three sites that we mentioned a few moments ago. I want to make the subtle shift to the debate last night and to what we saw and what we witnessed. I will, as a gentle segue, say that Mike Bloomberg was able, former New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg was able to corral both Vice President Harris and former President Trump together out on the sidelines before the ceremony in New York this morning to shake hands as they awkwardly did last night at the beginning of the debate. And I was talking to Bob earlier, you know, you think of where we were in 2008 where you have Barack Obama and John McCain, who were in the heat of a presidential election, and two men who put that aside and walked together to lay a wreath, and I can't imagine that happening in this environment, but there we are. Okay, well. So that happened last night. We spent 2 hours talking about the debate before the debate happened. And I don't think anybody on our panel, and this isn't a diss, anyone on our panel could have said that it would have gone the way it went. Now, obviously, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. However, the early polls tell us that the people who are watching the debate said that 61% believe that the Kamala Harris won the debate. And the line that we hear so often just in the last 12 hours is that how masterful she was in I just realized I shouldn't put these two words together. How good she was at baiting him, and
well played.
Yeah, thank you. of baiting him and getting him to pull whatever he was going to say aside and to move on to a different rant, for want of a better term. But although that term does seem accurate in this case. So in the moments we have here, let's just go around and for opening comments about what you made of last night and how it will shape this presidential contest over the next 8 weeks. Fred Hoff.
Well, I must say, over the first 3 to 5 minutes of this debate, my initial impression was former President Trump has this under control, and if he can keep this up, this election is decided in his favor. But he wasn't able to keep it up. You know, most American voters, I think, believe that President Joe Biden has failed in his stewardship of the economy and the southern border. Former President Trump's task last evening was to force Vice President Harris to own the policies and the performance of President Joe Biden, and he failed miserably. I think with discipline, with precision, Harris lured Trump away from a consistent critique of the administration's record on the economy and immigration. Trump's job was to stay relentlessly on message, even if that meant being boring for 90 minutes. All he needed to do was stay focused for 90 minutes. If he had done so, I think he would have emerged as the odds-on favorite to win in November. But he wasn't able to do so. Now, my favorite newspaper happens to be the Wall Street Journal, and I think there are words from today's lead editorial that are quite pertinent here. And I'll quote: "This is Wall Street Journal. She, Vice President Harris, won the debate because she came in with a strategy to taunt and goad Mr. Trump into diving down rabbit holes of personal grievance and vanity that left her policies and history largely untouched. He always takes the debate. He always takes the bait. And Ms. Harris set the trap, so he spent much of the debate talking about the past or about Joe Biden, or about immigrants eating pets, but not how he'd improve the lives of Americans in the next 4 years." This is the Wall Street Journal, not exactly a paragon of the left in the United States.
Malia.
Well, yeah, I agree. So Trump failed at the tasks that his camp set out for him. Of course, he came out afterwards and couldn't help himself saying, "The greatest debate I ever had in my life," which he's just incapable of any kind of self-reflection or self-critique, which is, it's not surprising that the Harris debate followed up immediately by saying, "Let's have another debate."
Yeah, absolutely.
So he failed at his tasks. She had a couple tasks herself, of course, one of which she accomplished, obviously, by getting him off message, by failing to allow him to really push her on her vulnerabilities. And she does have vulnerabilities because she's still, her policies are still not understood by a lot of the electorate. Like, how is she different from Joe Biden? You know, and I think it was actually pretty, in some sense, pretty smart of her not to dive into the details of that last night. You can't accomplish everything in one 90-minute debate. What she did accomplish is to get Trump off of his message, fail to exploit her vulnerabilities. But I think a lot of undecided voters who were hoping to get a better understanding of what a Harris presidency will look like came away still not sure. And so that's probably okay for her from a campaign perspective. She's got time over the next couple months to do that, to sort of lay out policies. A debate isn't the most effective way to do that. But there are a lot of voters who, even though a debate isn't the right place to talk about the details of policy, we're still hoping to see more of that. And so I saw some New York Times analysis this morning where they talked to different undecided voters, and a lot of them were like, well, we still don't know. You know, so like that's again not surprising. She accomplished probably the main task, which is to have a very different kind of debate than Joe Biden did. So the contrast between this one and the previous one, it couldn't be larger. So there's every reason for her camp to feel pretty happy this morning. And you know, I looked at the Washington Times, another not paragon of the left, and the way they characterized it, again, as a Harris win, and that that it was like a present that had been delivered to Donald Trump that he didn't unwrap. This present was the ability to really push her on some of the policies that are more associated with Joe Biden, and that didn't happen. He couldn't help himself.
Bob Griffin, you're good. You have full time.
Okay, thanks. So I even want to take it from the very, very beginning. I love the way Vice President Harris came out and purposely went over and shook Trump's hand, even though he obviously
I'm Kamala Harris.
Right.
How great was that?
Obviously, he did not want anything to do with her. And we'd be remiss if we didn't just talk about some body language for a second. Throughout the entire debate, I thought it was fascinating that Trump refused to look at her. And I loved the way the vice president would either be talking to us, the people, directly, but when needed, was pivoting and talking directly to Trump. And I think that was also part of unsettling him. Fred, I agree with you. The first few minutes, I was like, oh boy. I felt it was shaky. And then we got into the question about abortion.
Yes.
And she flipped gears. Yep. and I thought she was spectacular. And you, as sharp as she was and cogent, he looked old. Trump looked old. He looked confused. Obviously, the Springfield that he was talking about, where supposedly immigrants are eating pets, is the Springfield from The Simpsons. So he must have been doing his debate prep watching the Simpsons reruns. I thought that she did something that I didn't see in other debates with Trump, where she actually called out his crap, and didn't let him bully her the way I think Clinton, we saw with Clinton, and to a large degree what we saw with Biden. I'll also say that, you know, Biden's performance was so weak that I think it hid a lot of the poor performances from Trump in the last debate. And I again will tip my hat to the fact that I think Biden made the absolute right decision for the country by getting out. You know, when you come off stage and your people are already spinning it, saying that this was a rigged rigged deal, and that the fact that he was fact checked for, I mean, one, I think I heard one prognosticator talk about at least 33 different false claims in an hour in 42 minutes.
She had one apparently.
Yeah,
using the same.
Yeah, she
measure.
She probably said something nice about Trump. You know, that when you're coming off and you're saying that it was rigged and that it was three against one, you know, what's the old adage in sports? Don't put yourself in a position where the referees can actually determine the outcome. And he did. He was exhausting. It was exhausting listening to him again, and where why we'll continue to have cognitive disconnect is how can 75% of this country not be supporting Harris? When I look at Trump and I listen to Trump, you know, what was her quote about hard time connecting with reality? How could you trust this man with the button to the nuclear weapons?
There were moments of just like ranting, and
Festivus poll of complaints.
Yes,
and poor spoiled rich guy.
To your point of calling him on his crap. I thought Van Jones on CNN last night said people have wanted to see somebody put this bully in his place for a really long time, and they got it tonight. And that seemed accurate to me, Fred.
Yeah, I just like to pick up on Bob's point about you know, why is it so many Americans support this guy? And as I was watching the debate last night, I was, you know, reflecting on the fact that in 2016, Donald Trump got 46% of the vote. 2020, he got 47%. Current polls, obviously before the debate, suggest something on the order of 48%. This is something we really need to understand. If we're facing a crisis in this country, it's not Donald Trump. It's not Donald Trump personally. It's why is it that nearly 50% of our co-citizens believe that he is the answer to whatever sense of grievance they have? You know, dismissing it as, oh, these people are just stupid, or, oh, they're racists. I mean, you hear this from the left all the time. That is definitely the wrong medicine for addressing this. Somehow, we need to understand why so many of our fellow citizens want to go down this path. As far as the ABC handling of the debate, I thought it was pretty decent. I would have liked to have seen more fact checking of the vice president. The one thing she said last night that I found offensive was her claim that uniformed American military personnel are not in harm's way anymore. You know, tell that to the families of American servicemen killed not all that long ago in Jordan. Tell it to the families of servicemen currently serving in Syria and Iraq and off the coast of Yemen. She's the vice president of the United States. She wants to be commander-in-chief. She's got to show a bit more knowledge and sensitivity about this particular issue, in my view.
Do you think, and I don't disagree with you, I'm just asking the question of is that a poorly worded statement that it just wasn't fully thought out of the difference between us being in an active military situation versus soldiers in various places across the world.
Yeah, Joe, I can't say what accounts for it. It was not an accurate depiction of what's going on with with members of the American military. If she decides at some point to take a formal press conference and really allow herself to be grilled on some specifics, I hope that question will be put to her.
Especially where I thought there was a natural pivot there to about respect for the uniform and drawing people's attention back to the events at that Arlington National, comments about the Congressional Medal of Honor. I mean, there were enough other places for her to go to deflect the constant war theme and I think that's what she was trying to do.
Yeah, it was an off moment. I'm guessing 'cause there's so many ways, of course, that that Trump has insulted and been offensive about the military and tried to politicize the military. I mean, it's just it's a litany of things. So it's unfortunate that she wasn't as thoughtful as she could have been in that moment. I actually think there are. Oh, sorry, were you done?
Go ahead.
Yeah. There were two moments from last night, one of which didn't happen during the debate, that I think are going to do more to dissuade undecided voters than anything else. One is the Taylor Swift endorsement. That's like that. I mean, I feel ridiculous saying it, but you know, she does have a lot of influence over young people, and so she came out, you know, proudly signed childless cat lady for Kamala Harris, and so that was announced last night, and a lot of young people will pay attention to that. And then the other thing, during the debate, Vice President Harris mentioned that she and Tim Walz are both gun owners. And I wasn't surprised to hear that Tim Walz is a gun owner, you know, in Minnesota. But I didn't realize that she was as well. And so I'm sure, like, some Democrats may have, you know, cocked their eyebrow at that and be like, really? You know, why? But I think, like, that does a lot more to convince people who aren't sure where she stands. Is she really liberal or not? You know, the sort of people on the right or people in the middle who are undecided. Like, the fact that she's a gun owner, I'm just objectively speaking, my analysis is that is going to be more persuasive to people that she's not some extreme, far less liberal than that. You know, Trump trying to paint her as a Marxist because her father taught economics. I mean, it's just like, yeah. It shows that that she can't be boxed into that far left box he's trying to put her into.
Because it was you said the Festivus, but this airing of the litany, yeah, that he did. One of the things that he kept on saying was, "They're going to come and take your guns away. They're going to come and take your guns away. They're going to come and take your guns away." And then when she turned, she said, "I don't know where you're getting that. Both Tim Walz and I are gun owners,
right?
And we're not going to do that."
People don't really. Even Gabby Giffords is still a gun owner. You know, it's like, you know, there are Democrats who are for what they call responsible gun ownership. And
one comment, though, that is not, I don't think, is getting enough attention. And my wife and I were texting about it. Trump came back and he made the comment about, the reports she puts out. And that is so offensive to me. And I think it deserves more attention from the mainstream press. It's a reflection of his certainly his misogyny. It's a reflection of I think his desperation. But as you start to think about his candidacy and his potential return to office, There shouldn't be a woman out there or an ally of women out there who can support him because of that simple comment. The idea that how little esteem he holds, Vice President Harris is an amazing woman, you know, educated, professional, has an incredible career, and the idea that he would create the inference that she got there because of, in his vernacular, putting out is just so offensive, and it's sliding because of all the other garbage that he spewed.
I will. I want to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. I think there are going to be a few of them. panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Malia Dumont, Bob Griffin, Ambassador Fred Hoff, we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. A postmortem of the debate last night. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday. The morning after the debate last night between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. And we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. One of the things that struck me, and, you know, I think anyone who is in does what we do is you know, you don't think you can be surprised. Bob, you were just touching on this of something that like, oh, and you have to center yourself every once in a while, and you have to calibrate, because you get pulled into so many things of just outrageous statements. And I mean, we haven't even gotten into the about Springfield yet, yeah. But we'll talk about that. But the thing that really struck me of just being just inconceivable and uncomprehensible is this, in talking about January 6th, that he just showed up. They asked him to make a speech, and he showed up to make a speech. And then blaming Nancy Pelosi, which I know he's done this in the past, but this, I had no responsibility whatsoever, no responsibility for anything. But that was such a striking example of that, of I was just there to make a speech.
And then the victimhood for the insurrectionists questioning the police officers, not recognizing the death and destruction. I gotta call the Fraternal Order of Police Officers out right now for their hypocrisy. Shame on the FOP for endorsing him. Shame on you. You hung your brothers and sisters out to dry for partisan politics. His whole take on January 6th, and you know, as we talk about September 11th today, you know, you think about heroism in country, and then you think about January 6th, and you couldn't create a bigger juxtaposition of what leadership was, and what should be. It was his job to ensure the safety and security of the country, including the Capitol, and he sat there watching TV, throwing ketchup against the wall, doing nothing.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the ways that I think Vice President Harris was pretty masterful last night, and I think a lot of us can try to take a page out of this book, is that she, when he made false claims about her or suggested, she didn't always directly respond to him. I'm just thinking of, you know, when you see people say crazy things online, and I know, like, a lot of us can't help ourselves. We try to, you know, you have the unfulfilling argument with some internet troll because they say something so outrageous and so ridiculous that you want to correct it. And he said a lot of those things last night, and she didn't, unlike him, you know, he rose he took the bait every single time.
Yep.
And she didn't, and she was very good at being restrained in that way, because she has other ways of answering him. She'll answer him through the policy proposal she's going to put out. She answered him by staying on message and not getting sidetracked. And so that was a really interesting and unsurprising contrast last night. But it really just reminded me of how bad I am at that. Sometimes it's so hard to resist. But she did a really good job of it.
All right. We have a lot of letters, and we'll get to as many as we can as we continue our coverage and talk about the debate performances last night. I just one thing before we go to the letters, which is the main question that I think comes from this debate, which is 61% of the people say that they believe that Kamala Harris won the debate. We talked about this last night with our debate expert. What is winning? How do you define that? And that's a hard thing to do, but people are perceiving that she is the winner. I think everyone in this room feels very much that she was the winner of that debate, and certainly had command of that debate. Here's the key question. Will it matter?
That's what I was trying to get at in my opening, right, by saying, like, the undecided voters who are looking for something very specific didn't necessarily get it last night if they were looking for policy proposals. And so I think with some people who are hoping to see Donald Trump put in his place, they feel a sense of relief, and there's some satisfaction with that. Also seeing her act very presidential, that's the adjective that's been used in a lot of places, you know, that may sway some people. But the voters who are really going to decide based on policy, it's hard to believe there are still people out there who don't know where they're going to vote based on policy, but there are. And the debate did not convince some of those people.
Yeah, I think I think Vice President Harris is still vulnerable in the, you know, in the sense that a majority of Americans, according to polls, believe that the administration she served in for the past 3.5 years has failed in some key areas. I realize that's not the view of that's not the consensus view of people who appear on the roundtable or probably our listenership. Nevertheless. The arithmetic is there. Majority of Americans believe the administration has failed in some key areas, and now it's up to Republicans to try to refocus attention on that, and try to force her to explain where she stands on these issues. And again, much of this could have been accomplished last night if former President Trump had only been capable of staying on message. But I think the vice president's calculation was if it's true that that Donald Trump is a narcissist, it's going to be impossible for him to stay on message. Particularly if I challenge him personally on his business background, you know, 6 bankruptcies, on the crowd size, and all of this other business, and she was, absolutely correct in her assessment.
I think where it makes a difference is it reminds us all of how old, how unstable, how unpredictable, and how exhausting Donald Trump is. And for the core believers, is it going to make a difference? No, because they're going to laugh off the comment about eating pets. They're going to in their mind say that they're better off 4 years ago, even though he completely mismanaged COVID. Where it's going to make a difference is there are people who are on the fence that you have to look at his performance and say, not only is it unpresidential, he is unsafe to have the reins of the country. Where I think it's going to have an impact, we started to talk about the demographics, right? I think certainly for younger voters, there was a clear difference between the two candidates. I think for women, particularly suburban women, which was a big part of the 2016 win, you have to be looking at his comments, his misogyny, his position on abortion and their health care, and that's going to be a big difference. So places like Bucks County and Erie County in Pennsylvania, it's going to have an impact. His performance, I think, last night was in many respects just as bad as Biden's, but he won't do the right thing for the country and step back.
And his people aren't calling for him.
Or admit it.
They won't call for him to do that either, because they just chalk it up to bad. Like, he didn't perform as well as he could have. That wasn't really.
It was rigged. Yeah, it was rigged. Yeah, right. Everything is rigged. You know, because poor Donnie, you know, no, never catches a break.
What I hear from people I know who fully intend to vote for Donald Trump no matter what is I don't like him. In many respects, he's a jackass. He doesn't know how to behave, but by God, he hears me. He hears me. He hears my sense of grievance about what's wrong with this society.
And we have
to acknowledge this is real. 46% in 2016, 47% last time, maybe more this time. I agree that on the margins, last night's debate may have convinced some people who were not quite sure who they were going to vote for that that Mr. Trump is really unsuited for the presidency, perhaps. But it will not touch the base, and the base is extraordinarily large in this country.
We have a couple of letters like this, and I just want to address them. Matt writes that I believe the ambassador misheard Vice President Harris's statement. From the transcript, quote, "And as of today, there is not one member of the United States military who is in active duty in a combat zone in any war zone around the world, the first time in this century." Now, one might suggest the nuances here are misleading, given our military uses deadly force regularly, but she clearly is referring to the fact that we're not engaged in direct combat, as in Iraq and Afghanistan. In other words, we're not ourselves at war.
Again, tell this to the families of the American servicemen killed by Iranian proxies in Jordan. Tell it to the service people who are involved in shooting conflicts in Syria and Iraq, trying to suppress ISIS, the so-called Islamic State, from coming back. I think it would have cost Vice President Harris nothing to acknowledge this and to acknowledge the bravery and the sacrifice of the 1% of Americans, including families, who think enough of this country to serve in uniform and support those who do, as family members.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, there were a dozen U.S. service members. I haven't seen this on any headlines, but those of us who are in the military community know very well a dozen U.S. service members were injured in Iraq just last week under a rocket attack. So, yes, the transcript reflects exactly what she said, but I think that's kind of a semantic sleight of hand that doesn't reflect the reality of being in the U.S. military today.
All right, I'm going to go through some letters here quickly, and then we'll take a break. Let's see. We go to Bob, who says, VP Harris didn't say that no American. Okay, I just read that. It's a similar letter to what we had before. Great discussion this morning. While I agree with the panelists who said we need to understand why half the country believes Trump is in any way, quote, the answer, he was completely off base in trying to say Harris doesn't understand the dangers of our military. Trump stomps on our military with his bone spur heels. It's entirely wrong to try to put any focus on Harris where the military is involved.
Yeah, and look, as a Vietnam veteran myself, I'm Donald Trump's draft dodging is not something that I find attractive. And as I think I've mentioned before on this panel, when in 2015, I believe, Mr. Trump made his comments about John McCain, saying John McCain is not a hero because he was captured. I don't like people who were captured. I believed very strongly, and I would have put serious money to my immense disbenefit at the time, on the proposition that this is the end politically for Donald Trump. No American politician should survive a statement like that.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll read a bunch of letters, and then we'll be done. We'll and then the show will be over. We'll do all of that first. Ray Graff with news. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Malia Dumont, Ambassador Fred Hoff, and Bob Griffin on the program this morning. We have a ton of letters. A lot. So I'm going to go through these, and please, panelists, if you would like to comment on any of them, let me know. Otherwise, I'll roll through them, and then we can move on to some other aspects of the conversation as we go. I have admired, liked, and respected Bob Griffin, known to me only through appearances on WAMC, for a number of years.
I hear a butt coming.
I don't like the sound of this.
All those feelings were expressed to the nth degree today as I listened to him talk about Trump's insulting words about Vice President Harris. I won't repeat it. That comment alone, oft repeated by Trump, makes him unfit for any position of authority in this country. The VP is an accomplished, successful, principled, responsible, and delightful human who worked hard for her success. She lives a life driven by values, compassion, and ability. To suggest she reached success through providing sexual favors is despicable. Once again, thank goodness Bob Griffin got it right. He is a treasure.
All right. Thank you.
That's very nice. Oh, treasure.
Could you please send it to the president of the University of Albany, please?
No, I'm going to send it to an embroiderer and put it on a pillow. Laura says, perhaps some undecided voters enjoy the attention they receive by being undecided. It seems many of those focus groups are the same people getting asked multiple times if they have made up their minds yet. I felt that way while watching there was an Erie, Pennsylvania group on CNN last night, and I got that sense. It's just, I don't know how you can't make up your mind. And when they talked to them, it seemed like they very much had made up their mind. But
they just like talking about it.
Yes, right. They like to be, well, I could do this, but I could do that. But I think that he's amazing. Okay. So now we know, right?
It's like, what's the town in New Hampshire, the Gulch, that it's like the first, 12 voters or something,
right.
And then every 4 years, all of a sudden, they...
Pinkham Notch or
something.
Yeah,
they bloom to life and then disappear for 4 years.
My father always called it possum crotch, but I know that's not right. Okay. Pop, rest in peace. Raina says, where is the outrage on the panel over the egregious lies Trump spewed? Well, I think that's what we've been talking about over the last hour, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. At least 33 in an hour and a half. Yeah.
Harris gets called out for one comment that was factual but slightly contrived. So far, there seems to be almost an apology for how well Harris did in the debate. She pushed the button so that anyone with amnesia could be reminded what a danger he was and is. So what is the cost that was not to focus too much on her policies? He has no policies. Again, a huge double standard.
So let me jump on this, okay? I think one of the things that would be an absolute mistake on behalf of Harris supporters and Democrats is to take too long a victory lap. It was a great performance. There are areas that need to be strengthened, but you got to get to work now, because now you've got to take the momentum you have, and you have to get out into the neighborhoods, block by block, make sure people are turning out to vote. Because if you don't turn out to vote, this is too tight an election to say it's won. So don't take too long a victory lap. With that said, he lied all night, and I thought she was brilliant at the very beginning by saying, you know, basically sit back, strap in, because this dude is going to be lying all night. And she was right, and she called him out through. There's another lie. But at the same time, there are areas of Harris's game that the Democrats need to strengthen.
Yeah, and I think one of the challenges here is there are some undecided voters out there. I know it's hard to believe, you know, people haven't made up their minds yet between these two people, but there are people, and I presume millions of them, who take the attitude, you know, I really don't like Donald Trump. There's not much about this guy's personality, or nothing about this guy's personality, I find attractive. But I don't want Joe Biden part deux. I mean, lots of our listeners, lots of our panel may not agree with this. There are people who clearly think that President Biden has been an outstanding chief executive, but this is not the view of a majority of Americans, and this is where she remains vulnerable, notwithstanding a pretty good performance last evening.
You know, we were talking a lot when President Biden was still the candidate about the enthusiasm gap between Trump voters and Biden voters. And one of the ways where I think Harris was very successful last night and that sort of points towards the way forward is like the enthusiasm gap has lessened a lot, right? In fact, she's got a lot of momentum on her side. There are people who are excited to vote for her, and the people who were maybe just sort of marginally in her camp are probably going to lean more strongly towards her now. So like that kind of enthusiasm is what she really needs to focus on building on in the coming weeks, along with articulating more of a policy outlook that differentiates her from Biden.
Let's go back to the letters at hand here. We go to this one from Kim. Ambassador Hoff is dead on. We need to take a lesson away from this that is far more insightful into why so many support Trump. We need just look to those who voted for both Obama and then later for Trump. There is so little discussion about what a huge swath of this country wants in a president by supporting Trump. Beyond the theater around him, what do they want? We are far from having this election in the bag with Kamala Harris. And I think everyone, including Kamala Harris, agrees with that. She spoke immediately in the city after the event. That was the first thing she said. I mean, look at the poll numbers. Where this is not, we had a good night, but there's a lot of work to do. Dave said, I disagree that undecideds only care about policy. They want to look into the eyes of this new candidate and see if she's got what it takes to lead. She proved that in spades, looking at Trump and telling him that Putin would eat you for lunch, capped it, in my opinion.
Oh, that was great. No, that's astute. So there are different groups of undecided voters. And I think I said this earlier, that the ones who are looking for someone to be presidential, we're probably a lot of them were convinced last night that she can be presidential, but there is a large group of undecided voters that are looking for policies, and that wasn't what they got last night, which is not surprising. You don't get that in 2 minute sound bites in a debate.
Yeah, and Putin indeed has had President Trump for lunch.
And dessert.
One and dessert. One need only take a look at the. At the video of the Helsinki summit from a few years ago, probably the most disgraceful episode involving an American president.
Let's go to this letter from Charles, who says, nothing exposed Trump's game more than his adulation of Viktor Orban. That was a moment. I mean, I think there were a couple of those moments, one more distressing than the other. But the Viktor Orban one of, see, people like me, they're wondering why there aren't more leaders like me. I thought that was very telling. There was another moment where he was saying he was proving a point by saying that all of the journalists agree. Laura Ingraham agrees with me. Sean Hannity agrees with me. Jesse Waters agrees with me. Okay. thought that was telling as well.
It's these wild claims that everybody, every Democrat and Republican, supported the Roe decision. No. No, we didn't. In fact, 65% of the country says they didn't.
For 52 years, they have wanted to put it into the hands of the states.
No, not at all.
Right.
Not at all.
I mean, obviously, and that gave that was a huge opening for Kamala Harris, and she was so strong on that.
In presidential too, there are two other elements that I really respect the vice president's performance last night. One was presidential because I thought when she was talking about the Ukraine but then talking about Poland, I thought that was a brilliant move of speaking specifically to a huge voting bloc in Pennsylvania, which is important, but more importantly, being able to again draw attention to NATO and the importance of the alliance. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was critical. The other element that I was deeply touched was her empathy for women's health when she was talking about women bleeding out in the parking lot of hospitals because of the the ridiculous restrictions on that have been placed on the medical community because of this corrupt, illegitimate Supreme Court. And you know, she balanced humor, she balanced toughness, she balanced the sort of presidential, and she balanced empathy. And he didn't have an answer to any one of those.
I think in terms of Kamala Harris being presidential, just looking at the campaign, I mean, it was just literally a couple weeks ago that she became the candidate. And yes, she appeared presidential last night, but I think like the entirety of what she's done in just a couple weeks just strengthens that view of her as presidential, that she has taken command of this campaign. She ran a convention that was very different from what a Biden convention would have looked like in just a couple weeks, pulled that together. And so it's not easy to change course in such a juggernaut as an American presidential campaign. And she's done it. And so I'm very interested to see. She's shown that she's had a lot of patience. I think she's been waiting for the right moments, do the right things at the right moments, to build on momentum and unveiling things at the right time. So I think we are going to see her getting out and doing the work, as Bob said, over the next couple of weeks. And it's just been masterful, not just in the debate last night, but overall since she became the candidate.
We go to this letter from Katie. As a mom of 20-somethings, I can share they were not enthused about the choice between two old guys their grandparents' age for president. Kamala, at least, is the age of their parents. Young folks want to be part of something bigger, and the Swiftie movement is one of those things. If Taylor gets young folks to register and show to vote, that is a good thing. I just was taken by, I mean, we can giggle at this, but the statement she made, the post, I'm just going to read it because this is really thoughtful, and this just isn't a, this is very well thought out. I'm going to endorse somebody and put it on my Facebook or on my Instagram feed. Like many of you, I watched the debate tonight. If you haven't already, now is a great time to do your research on the issues at hand and the stances these candidates take on the topics that matter to you the most. As a voter, I make sure to watch and read everything I can about their proposed policies and plans for this country. Recently, I was made aware that an AI of me, quote unquote, falsely endorsing Donald Trump's presidential run was posted to his site. It really conjured up my fears around AI and the dangers of spreading misinformation and brought me to the conclusion that I need to be very transparent about my actual plans for this election as a voter. The simplest way to combat misinformation is with the truth. I will be casting my vote for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz in the 2024 presidential election. I'm voting for Kamala Harris because she fights for the rights and causes I believe need a warrior to champion them. I think she is a steady-handed, gifted leader, and I believe we can accomplish so much more in this country if we were led by calm and not chaos. I was so heartened and impressed by her selection of a running mate who has been standing up for LGBTQ+ rights, IVF, and a woman's right to her own body for decades. I've done my research, and I've made my choice. Your research is all yours to do, and the choice is yours to make. I also want to say, especially to first-time voters, remember that in order to vote, you have to be registered. I also find it's much easier to vote early. A link where to register and find early voting dates and info in my story. With love and hope, Taylor Swift, childless cat lady. That's good.
Yeah.
There's a reason she's an award-winning songwriter. You know, she's very poetic.
And what, 250
million?
$2 million followers?
But it's the. I mean, hopefully, she can create the level of enthusiasm to continue the wave. I mean, it's a sprint now.
All right. And let's see. I am getting new email, and it's getting mixed up with the old email. We go to Dan. We go to Jim. 9/11 before the day ended, Americans were united 23 years later. We have sadly managed on our own to slice America in half. It is hard to process. That from Jim. Dan, also on 9/11, said, I'm a 22-year retired Iraq veteran and was serving in 42nd Infantry Division from Troy, New York, as a citizen soldier, National Guard. The units around New York City were the first to respond. A month later, I was there, the pile still burning, paper and tape in the trees, the smell and sight still vivid. It was the best service I ever did for my country.
Thank you.
Good for him. Thank you.
We go to Molly, who says, I discovered the best way to watch last night's debate, at least for me, was to mute the TV whenever the old guy was on. I turned on closed captioning so I could see the words that poured out of his mouth, and it was glaringly obvious that he made no sense whatsoever. And it spared me from having to hear the rants.
Then, we all have our coping mechanisms.
That's right. We know what we're capable of enduring. At least most of us do.
But you know, we laugh about it, but at the same time, think about Donald Trump's view of this country. The dystopian, the dark, the pessimism, the hate. I mean, the vice president was in his, was in his head, I'm sure, all night, which is just an ugly, ugly place to be. But his vision of this country is not the country I live in. I mean, even with the fact that I disagree with some of his supporters, I don't hate them the way he hates.
No, and I'm going to agree with you. But just to, there was such anger. I mean, just seething anger. And it was, there was nothing productive about it. There was nothing, and not so much about, I mean, there's all this stuff about him, right? About how he's been screwed over so many times and poor president. However, the vision of America was just, you know, we're going to World War III, we're going to wake up, they're going to take your guns away, they're going to do, everything is going to go to hell. And I thought that was, and Harris called him out on it a couple of times and said, listen to this, just listen to this. This is not what we need right now. We need somebody who has hope and is going to move us forward instead of someone who believes that the country is such a detriment.
Yeah, much of what came out of his mouth last night was bizarre, but I think we need to acknowledge that he is tapping into a widespread dystopian view of what's happened to the United States. Millions of Americans living in communities where jobs, industry, have disappeared over the past several decades, with Democratic and Republican administrations alike failing to help people in these communities make the necessary adjustments. Americans witnessing post 9/11, the invasion of Iraq, a financial crisis, where Democrats and Republicans alike agreed that the people who caused the crisis would not face accountability. I mean, there is a view in the United States, you know, it may be far removed from the New York Capital Region, from the Hudson Valley, but in large parts of this country, there are tens of millions of Americans who think, whether we like it or not, Donald Trump is the answer. And addressing these problems is going to be I'm afraid, a multi-generational task for leaders in this country.
Back to the letters, just a few moments before we go to a break at the top of the hour. Kathleen says, what debate did Fred Hoff watch? that he thought that Trump was the winner in the first 5 minutes. Don't think that's what you're
saying. No, that's not exactly what I said. I said watching the beginning of the debate over the first 3 to 5 minutes, I thought if Trump can keep this up, if he can remain focused, if he can force Vice President Harris to own the Biden record on the economy, on immigration, if he can remain calm, if he can avoid saying outlandish things, all he's got to do is remain disciplined for 90 minutes. Who in the world can't do this?
Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we heard the same thing during the RNC. Where they said this is a new, it's going to be positive, it's going to be a uniter, and that lasted for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But the Republican base doesn't want him to be a uniter. I mean, the people who are supporting him, that's not what they're looking for.
No, they're not. They're not, Malia. But I think it would have cost him nothing.
Right.
With
no,
that
I,
base,
I agree with you.
That
on all
base
that, yeah.
is that base is with him no matter what.
Yeah.
If Donald Trump had been able to mimic gentlemanly behavior for 90 minutes, I believe he'd be the odds-on favorite to win this election.
The letter went on to say, "Can WAMC stop this sane washing? The guy was clearly unhinged, angry, and demented. Your efforts at balance are ridiculous." Kathleen, thank you very much for your comments. I am going to forward you all of the letters that tell us just how biased we are. So just for you know that there are other sides to this. Gene says, fantasy tales at his rallies, same fantasy tales at his election debates. Biggest crowds in history, world leaders love him, best economy in history. He can talk to Putin into taking his advice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Asking her over and over again when she last talked to Putin was just weird, but okay. Donald creates a wishful fantasy that soothes his hungry ego. I don't know if he himself actually believes it or if he just marinates in his own fantastical imagery, but he seems
nice
to
image.
Think that if he repeats it often enough, his followers will believe it, and he's usually right about that. His frequent rallies provide those repeat venues.
Well, Trump doesn't need to talk to Putin himself on a regular basis because he has a chip implanted in his brain where they just commune telepathically.
You know, technology has brought us to this.
Yeah.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll finish up. Thank you very much for being with us. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Malia DeMont, Bob Griffin, Ambassador Fred Hoff, and more of your questions. And we'll talk about pets in Springfield, too. All that and more. First News. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We've got about 15 minutes or so. Maybe in that time we'll get the sparrows out of the studio. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Former President Donald Trump on Tuesday doubled down on a false and dehumanizing claim pushed by his running mate and some Republicans that immigrants in Springfield, Ohio, who came into the country during the Biden-Harris administration are injuring and eating Americans' pets. Quote, "In Springfield, they're eating the dogs. The people that came in, they're eating the cats. They're eating. They're eating the pets of the people that live there." Trump said that at the ABC News debate last night between him and Vice President Kamala Harris. Quote, "And this is what's happening in our country, and it's a shame." Moderator David Muir, who we haven't talked about the moderators, but I personally think, first of all, that's a thankless job.
Yeah.
And I think if anyone has ever asked to do it, you just say, no,
no.
I'm not hosting the Oscars. I'm not hosting a presidential debate.
I won't be on the roundtable. Oh,
right,
no.
Exactly. But I thought they did as good a job as you possibly could ask for, given the circumstances. And it was courteous and civilized. And there were so I say this because David Muir did push back, saying that the city manager of Springfield had said there were no credible reports of such claim, and Trump refused to concede. I've seen people on television. The people on television claimed my dog was taken and used for food, Trump said, interrupting David Muir. So maybe he said that, and maybe that's a good thing to say for a city manager. Oh, to be that guy this morning.
Yeah.
The escalation of the baseless and bizarre assertion came a day after Senator J.D. Vance, Trump's running mate, shared a post on X in which he cited unnamed reports claiming that people in the town west of Columbus have had their pets abducted and eaten by people who shouldn't be in this country. He was talking more about cats. Trump riffed and added dogs to the equation. Trump also posted on a social media platform AI-generated images of himself with various animals, seemingly a reference to the Springfield claim. And if you've seen those are truly horrifying images. Vance, who has long claimed that immigrants are draining resources in towns such as Springfield, was promoting the baseless suggestion in what appeared to be an effort to attack Harris. Police in Springfield told local news outlets that there are no reports of pets being stolen or eaten in the city limits. Asked today about the Tuesday about the unsubstantiated reports Vance had pushed, White House National Security spokesman John Kirby called it dangerous misinformation. That's a lot of words from the Washington Post without getting to what I think is a very racist element about the Haitian community.
It fits into a long and disgusting history of racism. I mean, there's been a lot of, but it fits in perfectly with the way the Trump administration and also the Trump campaign now has been talking about people of color. It's like that was one of the most awkward moments last night, is when he was talking about, well, she was black, she's not black, she says she's black. It's like he doesn't see people of color as equally human, and he doesn't know how to talk to them or about them or about their identity. And apparently J.D. Vance doesn't differ from him that much. But this specific complaint that they have, this accusation of eating dogs, I mean, that's something that was brought up in the past century about Chinese immigrants. Yeah. I mean, it's a very specific kind of
slur.
As I said, yeah, slur against immigrants, and it's disgusting.
Yeah, I would say that I would guess from the point of view of conventional conservative Republicans, this is disastrous. And I'm talking about Republicans like Asa Hutchinson, former governor of Arkansas, Nikki Haley, former governor of South Carolina. For Americans who have concerns about how the southern border has been managed over the past 3.5 years, coming up with these bizarre tales of pets being abducted and eating simply detracts from a serious case that has to be made, and a serious case that can actually influence the minds of people who haven't quite decided for whom they're going to vote in this election. So it's entirely self-destructive. In terms of the moderators last night, what impressed me was the coherence of the questions they asked. One of my pet peeves over the years, over the decades, has been the performance of reporters at presidential press conferences and so forth, the inability to pose a question that doesn't go on for more than 75 words. The people running the show last night, I thought, did a very good job. I thought they could have done a bit more in terms of fact checking on the vice president's side, but But that's kind of a minor complaint. I thought they did a good job overall.
So before we get off, I mean, J.D. Vance, I think, is an idiot. But let me just say, he's this weird fetish with pets.
This okay. whole campaign, this, I don't understand. What happened?
I don't know, but he actually
RFK and the bear
and the whale
juice and I don't understand that. And then there's Christy Nome and shooting her dog. And what happened?
He was walking back those comments when
he said it may not be true. But we'll see, because we're still getting these reports, and that was about 2 hours before Trump said what he said at the debate last night.
We're making light of it, but there's also this other issue that bothers me, is that, you know, part of the conversation shouldn't be so much about eating the pets. It's what kind of country are we if we allow people to be so starved that the only place they could think about getting food would be from pets. And it just, you know, it raises questions about, you know, where is the soul of this country right now? And this goes back to the comments I think we were talking about a little bit earlier. You look at Trump, and there is no soul, there is no empathy. And at least what Harris is doing, and she's doing something, frankly, that I don't think Biden is capable anymore of doing, it. And that is creating a sense of hope and optimism. And even if you disagree with her, she at least laid out what the future is. I didn't hear a single thing that was said by Donald Trump last night that points me into the direction of the country is going to be better off.
And it's not just, I think, Fred is right in pointing out that, you know, the governors of Arkansas and South Carolina see this as disastrous. But, like, let's see where it's really going to come home is in Florida. There are thousands and thousands of Haitian immigrants in Florida. And I can't imagine, I don't know how many of them typically vote, but hearing themselves maligned in such a horrible way is something that there's enough of them that they, in Florida, they can form a voting bloc there. Could be influential.
Two things. One is that the Washington Post reporting the baseless notion that immigrants are hurting animals in Springfield appears to come from a viral Facebook post first shared in a Springfield Facebook group, in which a user claimed that their neighbor's daughter's friend had found her lost cat hanging from a branch at a home where a Haitian neighbor lives, which is different than, but okay. So that seems to be the derivation. The other thing, too, is I guess I'm not... somebody mentioned this earlier about immediately after Kamala Harris said, well, yeah, let's do this again. Let's have another debate. And yes. Trump said, why should I have another debate with her? I won this one. There's no reason to have another debate. I don't know. Do we need one? It doesn't seem like what do we get from that?
I'm not sure there's much to be gained from it. I mean, even if it was a repeat performance, you know, she wouldn't get much farther ahead from, you know, she's demonstrated what she needed to demonstrate in terms of being presidential and putting him down rabbit holes. And he's not capable of being disciplined even for 90 minutes, as Fred pointed out. So I don't think it would be much different. And I don't think she would gain very much from it, even if she did win again.
The other thing I blanked when we were talking about just on the pets, and the way these things are picked up by other Republicans is just bizarre to me as well. And so Ted Cruz on X shared an image of two cats hugging each other with an overlaid text reading, "Please vote for Trump so Haitian immigrants don't eat us." Wesley Hunt, a Republican from Texas, shared a video on X that contained AI-generated footage of Trump kissing a duck and knitting next to a cat. "We cannot allow our pets to become a hot lunch for Kamala's newcomers." Hunt said in his post, this November, you can do your part, protect the animals, and vote Trump. This is where we are, folks.
That people actually believe it is what, like...
Yeah, and these are not serious Republicans. They're not even conservatives. If William F. Buckley were still with us, he'd be taking the lead in denouncing mm-hmm. this kind of behavior and speech.
The psyche of the GOP right now is, I mean, I feel like I'm skinny dipping in the septic system of a Taco Bell. It's such an ugly, ugly,
lovely
dark
image.
Place.
Thank you. Wow. Specific.
Oh, boy.
No disrespect to Taco Bells. a little bit. Just a little.
Kathy said, I am sad. It would seem, based on your discussions, that no matter what the Democrats or Harris do, more people say Trump is better and will fix all, of our problems. My nanny used to say that you get what you pay for. In this case, we will get what we vote for. I am not looking forward to living in Trump's America. I guess that it is what people really want, an autocratic theocracy. Then that will be that. Who do you think will really be in charge? Trump does not have the attention span to carry out Project 2025. It is very complex. Bannon, Miller, I shudder to think. I mean, I understand the point of the letter. I do think no matter what the Democrats do or Harris do, people will say that Trump is better. Well, someone made the comment last night on MSNBC that if the election were held today, Donald Trump would probably win. But the election isn't being held today. The election is being held in 8 weeks. And in that time, the campaign, based on what happened last night and what is shifting, could be a very, very different outcome.
Yeah, and I would I guess I would take some exception to the view that members of the Trump base expect Donald Trump to fix what's wrong with this country. I think just based on my own unscientific sample of people I know who intend to vote for Donald Trump, there is no particular belief that he's going to fix things. Tens of millions of Americans are willing to vote for this man simply on the grounds that they believe he hears them. Okay, and this is important.
We are out of time. My thanks to everyone. Thank you all. That was really great. I appreciate your comments and your insights and being so thoughtful on this post-debate morning. We'll continue with the roundtable after this short break.